So this is Adriana Sisco. The date is September 20th, 2021. And this is an interview for the Country Oral History Project, Lexington's first lesbian bar. I am speaking with Penny Howard, and we are both doing this over Zoom in our respective homes/bedrooms in Lexington, Kentucky. Now, Penny, to start us off, how about you tell me a little bit about yourself in general?
Okay, I am 1 month shy of 70 years old. I am retired from the telephone company after 41 years, moved to Lexington in 1970 to go to UK and stayed around, and been in Versailles for the last 20 plus years.
Okay.
I'm married and have three dogs and two horses, and we have a small farm south of Versailles.
Oh, okay. So you're in Versailles right now.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Thank you. I guess to start us off, I'll just go right to the beginning. Tell me about growing up, essentially. Just kind of summarize for me the general experience of being young.
Okay. Family. I've got three siblings, grew up in Oxford, Ohio, on a farm there, and had an idyllic childhood. My sister and I both loved horses from the time we were small, and so we grew up surrounded by horses and doing 4-H and just a very laid-back, innocent kind of farm life. And then, as I said, came to UK and started as a freshman in 1970.
Okay. And tell me about school in Ohio. What was school like for you?
School was great. Small high school, just a county high school. I think there were 170 in my graduating class, and played every sport I could play, which at that time was very limited for women, young girls. That was before Title IX. So we were limited in a lot of ways, but yeah, it was a great town to grow up in. Miami University is there. So you got some of the college vibe going on, as well as small town life.
Okay. Yeah. And was religious faith at all a part of your household? And if so, to what degree?
We went to church pretty much every Sunday. I was raised Methodist. I'm not practicing any religion at this point in my life, but yeah, it was a daily or a weekly thing for sure.
And you mentioned that you played a lot of sports, but the choices were kind of limited because it's pre-Title IX. Obviously, that was an issue. Which sports did you play, though? Which ones specifically?
Played volleyball, field hockey, track, and basketball. And that was all there was in our high school, anyway.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. And now we're going to start moving, you know, more in the direction that you would expect this would. Growing up, what was your awareness of just the existence of, like, lesbian, gay, LGBT people in general? Like, was that ever something you heard about, or is that not a topic that ever came up?
I had no idea there were options or that there were names for those options. I can remember when I told my parents that I was gay, my father looked at me and said, "What does that mean?" And he got the encyclopedia out and started trying to look up homosexual in the Collier's encyclopedia. Uh-huh. And from there, the conversation went south.
Oh, my God. Okay. We're going to get into that. but right. So it sounds like those kind of words, those concepts that just wasn't really a topic growing up, but it does sound like eventually you did kind of realize, because eventually you do, you know, come out and all of that.
Right.
So how old were you when you did realize there were other options, essentially?
Probably, let's see, I would say 21.
Okay.
Yep.
And remind me, was this before the UK move or into the UK move?
No, this was when I got to Kentucky, yeah.
Got to
live in a women's dorm, yeah. From there on, it was like, look out.
Okay, actually, tell me.
Well, it's better than winning the lottery. It was just like, this is so awesome.
So tell me more about that. So you come to UK to do, you know, undergrad, you move into this women's dorm. I'm assuming that before this point, you weren't really aware of certain, like, ideas, words, other options, at least.
Right, none whatsoever. I'm to this day amazed at how naive I was and how it was possible to be raised and never know anything like, you know, gay or lesbian existed. I had two aunts. Well, I had an aunt and then an aunt whose sister, who I years later figured out pretty quick that they were both gay, but they were always just spoken about as, you know, being single and too bad they had never found somebody. And yet they both were in relationships with women at the time. I didn't know that as a young person, but yeah, so it was, there was always something, an excuse for it if it reared its ugly head at that point.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And so you get away from sort of that environment and you're in Lexington, you're in the dorm. Tell me what that experience was like for you. Cause it seems like you started thinking about things and things just kind of started moving from that point onward.
Exactly. Right? It just took off. And I think I just fell in love with everybody. I mean, it was like, it was just amazing. And then I met some gay women. And so then I was like, oh, wow. So this is okay. This is, or as okay as it can be at that point in time.
Right.
But yeah. So things were changing just so rapidly with me figuring out who I was and what I wanted to do. I quickly lost most interest in school. ended up not graduating, but I was having one heck of a good time. So there's that.
And you mentioned that you met some gay women then. So how did you connect with them? Like, how did you know that they were gay? Did they tell you or did you hear about it? Like, how did that happen?
That was, I mean, there were, you know, women that were obviously together. I still at that point didn't know exactly, but they seemed really close. And, you know, and I was like, wow, that looks like fun. But, and then there was a women's, I can't remember. I think it was called the Women's Council or Women's something. And a group of women started on campus. And this was when we were trying to get the Equal Rights Amendment ratified and that kind of stuff. So we met, I don't know, every other week or something on campus. And there was a couple of two or three gay couples there. And so I got to know them and, you know, started learning as things went at that point.
Gotcha. And when you were actually like meeting and learning about like these different sort of gay individuals you met, like, what did you think about that? Were you basically like, oh, I mean, something to the effect, you said something like this earlier, were you like, oh, like, this is a great idea? Or was there sort of like a acclimation period where you're like, oh, like, I'm not really sure. I've never encountered this before.
No, I was so there. I just didn't have a name for it. So yeah, I mean, I was very aware of the fact I was attracted to women. I think I know I was in love with my eighth grade gym teacher. And I think probably I can remember as far back as fifth or sixth grade, you know, just feeling different and knowing there was something different there.
Yeah, that's a phrase that a lot of the women I've interviewed have used, which is that when they were a kid, they just knew that they were different somehow. For you, and it might be kind of hard to answer because it's an ambiguous kind of concept. But what was it that made you realize or feel like, oh, I'm different from other people? Like, was there anything in particular where you're like, oh, other people do this and I do that? Like, what was sort of the feeling there?
Well, the fact that I had no interest in boys whatsoever. And everybody, you know, it was like my mother was just like puzzled, and my brother would try to set me up with one of his friends or something. And I knew that I didn't care anything about boys and I just wanted to be with my teammates and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, that was the most obvious thing to me. And so I had, you know, I had the sense that I was different, but I didn't feel like there was anything wrong. It was just like, well, I still kind of thought, well, I guess I'll get married at some point. Because I didn't realize there was any other option.
Okay. Yeah, I see. And so when you're at UK and you join the sort of social group, you're all in, you've been waiting for this forever, you just didn't realize it yet, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so at what point, I mean, assume like it's just kind of like this group and everyone knows each other is gay, et cetera, but at what point did you start like telling people outside of the circle, or like did you tell people outside of the circle?
I don't know that I told people so much, but it was just so obvious. Like at work, everybody knew I was gay, and you know, there were issues at work because of it. But at the same time, I've got a pretty outgoing personality, and I was able to just, you know, I've started at the telephone company, which meant I worked a shift with 70 other women. So, you know, it was like a party from the time I got to work until I got off work. And there were women to flirt with and women to compliment and women to sit by and women to, So it was, you know,
And
I
once again, you
jumped
got
in.
lucky, basically.
So I didn't ever feel the need. Most people just knew and have always known kind of thing. And I did come out like to my sister at one point. And well, I guess, yeah, I kind of officially came out to my entire family at one point or another. So, but anybody else, I've never felt the need to tell. They either recognize it or they don't. And it's usually pretty quick that they recognize it.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And how old were you when you worked at the telephone company with the like 70 women or whatever?
That was 1975, so I think I was 23 when I started.
Okay, because you mentioned that there were some issues there, and I was just kind of curious what you meant by that.
There was issues with management. They didn't like the fact that I was gay, and so they would tell me to act to behave differently. You know, anything from the way I sat in my chair, because I'd sit back in the chair with my feet up on the desk. And they're like, oh, you can't, don't do that. That's not ladylike. And that doesn't look good. Or I'd sit with my chair spun around backwards, or just picking at me in the break room. You're having too much fun, you know, leave these women alone. And it's like, none of them were complaining. So I wasn't going to stop. But so that kind of thing. And then I was the first woman in Kentucky to be awarded the job of telephone installer outside. So I climbed telephone poles, and I was the first woman to ever do that in Kentucky. So that was a big deal. They tried every way they could think of to talk me out of doing that, from you're not strong enough to you're going to get hurt. Girls don't do that. You know, why would you want to do something that nobody else is doing? Just endless kind of stuff. So there was always somebody waiting to say, stop. But I made it 41 years.
Okay. And that sort of issue or feedback you got about oh, this isn't ladylike, so you can't do things that aren't ladylike or whatever. Is that feedback that you ever got from, you know, other people outside of the telephone company, or was it more just the telephone company that you had that experience?
Lost and was kicked out of an apartment by the landlord when she found out my partner and I were gay. So I've experienced that kind of discrimination. So job discrimination, housing discrimination. But no, nobody else, you know, I've been called a tomboy when I was young, but nobody
That's what I
else has
was
ever.
curious about, because I was starting to get that vibe essentially.
Sure. Yeah. So
Yeah.
that's always, that's a good way to handle it when you don't want to talk about it, or you don't know how to label it. So people would use tomboy as, I think it's just kind of a blanket cover for those of us that were gay. So.
Right. That makes sense. And so, in terms of your family, was it your sister that you told first, in terms of any time that you mentioned being gay to family members?
Well, I told my mom and dad almost immediately after I, you know, started seeing women and realized what was going on. And so I went to tell them, and then my sister, you know, it was always something kind of everybody knew, but we never really discussed it. But my sister, I've felt the need at one point to have a conversation with her.
And just kind of in general, how did that conversation go with your sister?
It went well. She's the exact opposite of me, very quiet and shy, and she's my younger sister, so she's always kind of followed my lead. And you know, she was just like, well, okay. She didn't want to know any detail. You know, she's not one to question me in any way, but she's always been very accepting. So that was good.
And it sounds like, so that went well. But it sounds like the conversation with your parents and your dad gets out the thesaurus and stuff. You mentioned that that started going downhill after
Yeah, well,
the
just a
thesaurus.
lot of yelling, just a lot of yelling, and I don't understand this. What are you telling me? What does that even mean? You're just confused. You need to go see Reverend Confire at the church and have a conversation with him. And you know, this is after I'd moved to Lexington, so it wasn't like I was going to go to the Methodist preacher and have a conversation, because but they were just, you know, they were just trying to grab at whatever they could grab at to save me from myself.
Right.
So
Is that something that you all, after that conversation, did you, was that not a topic that would be discussed again, or
No, pretty much wasn't. I went home with, a lot of different women over the years, and later in life, my dad fell in love with my partner. So, as far, just loving her as a person and stuff.
Oh, I
So
was like,
I
wait,
got deal with
why?
that. No. Sorry, they all thought, oh God, that doesn't sound right. Chapter two.
I was like, oh God, no,
That's
that's
a whole
terrible.
nother conversation.
Right. Yeah, that would be. That really would be.
Oh, you're killing me. Oh, Lord. But yeah, he became very accepting. So,
Oh, okay.
yeah, that was a good thing.
All right, I understand. And so it's in 75 when you're at the telephone company, I think you said, or when you start there. Okay. And then what
Yeah,
happened?
that's when I started.
Gotcha. And what happens between there and the first time you go to the country, just in your life? What kind of anything significant?
Well, I one of the things that was a big event was as a telephone operator and directory assistance operator, we of course were giving out phone numbers. And one night I'm sitting there at work and I noticed people kept calling up. A lot of people would call and ask for this one particular bar that was on Main Street. And it was called Montparnasse, later called the Living Room. And somebody told me that's a gay bar. And I was like, are you kidding? There's such a thing as a gay bar? And I think I went as soon as I got off work, and I lived there until they opened the country. We would usually go, you just went two or three nights a week at least. And yeah, so that was a big event.
Yeah, I'm sure.
A lot of softball was played, a lot of that was our big social activity, I think, was softball. And the parties afterwards, and the practices, and party after practice, and party after the game, and just let's have a party.
It's just like a party all the time.
Yes.
Okay, well, some follow-up questions. So the living room or Cafe Montparnasse, I guess now the bar complex.
Yes, I think they've ruined
Yeah.
Probably not. I shouldn't say that. I haven't been there in years, but it was sure sweet in the beginning.
Yeah. And so tell me about like during in this area of like the mid late 70s, tell me about because you said you used to go to the living room like a lot before the country and then you go to the country. Tell me about what the living room was like in terms of were there more men than women, more women than men, equal? What was sort of the vibe there in terms of like lesbian potential in that space?
Well, yeah, it was two stories, and there was a spiral staircase, and the lesbians were pretty much upstairs, and the men were down. And it was a much smaller space than it did last time I was there. Of course, when it was Johnny Angel, they had opened it up, and it was quite a bit bigger. But yeah, from what I remember, the women pretty much were upstairs and dancing. That's where the big dance floor was. I don't really remember too many of the guys being up there, but they must have because Lord knows they like to dance. And then, of course, there was the police coming through with their German Shepherd dogs on a regular basis to intimidate us all. And usually there'd be like two or three cops come through with snarling German Shepherds on the end of a leash. And they'd just come walking through and they'd stand and look at all of us and, maybe speak to a few people, I don't know. And then they'd pass their way out and, kind of an intimidation factor. I don't really know what they thought they might accomplish or. But so there was always that, even when we were trying to just have a good time, there they'd be. But yeah, so it was kind of divided, but it was a good time.
Okay, yeah. And you also mentioned softball. So was there like a specific team that you were a part of? Was it like all lesbians? Was it only part lesbian? Like what was sort of the what was going on with the softball?
Our team, yeah, most of the teams I think were all lesbians for the most part. Unless there was a church league on Wednesday night, and a few lesbians played in that league, but they did it, without being obvious that they were gay. But yeah, other than that, I don't know. There were 10 or probably 10 or 12 teams in Lexington, I'm guessing. And I was thinking back on it, I think they were probably mostly lesbian teams. There are very few people on there that I can think of that weren't gay. So, yeah. There were
And
plenty of us with our gloves ready to play.
right. And you mentioned that there would be, you know, after, say, like, practice or whatever, so there could be parties. Where would those be? At people's houses? Where would those usually take place?
Yeah, usually at my house. As far as our team went, yeah, I feel it was usually at my apartment. So, yeah, we just all gather and everybody have their, you know, their coolers of beer or their six packs of beer or whatever, and we have a party. So, yeah, a lot of music and a lot of smoking and a lot of beer. So, and it was usually two or three times a week, probably. I often say I'd like to have the money I spend having fun.
It would be a lot of money, probably.
It would be a lot of money, but I don't think I'd really change anything anyway.
Mm-hmm. And so when and how do you learn about the country?
Oh, gosh. The women that started it, everybody knew them. I mean, there was a rumor they were going to open a bar, and everybody was just beside themselves with excitement. And then we learned that it was coming. And so the night it opened, you couldn't get in the door. There were so many women there. Yeah. So,
you were there.
Everybody knew the country was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you were there.
That night, right there after, usually we were there just very often. Like I can't remember now. I think they were only open. I don't think they were open 6 days a week. I'm not sure now. I don't remember, but it was packed all the time.
Wow. Okay. And you were there the first night they opened, I think you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember just any sort of details about that, about like your experience of it? I know you mentioned you could barely get in because it was so crowded, for example.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think it was a joyous occasion. And everybody was, you know, excited to have our own space. I'm getting emotional.
Yeah, it is emotional.
It is.
Yeah.
It meant a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. This is not uncommon in these interviews, believe me. Because it goes back to, like, you know, some of the greatest times in these people's lives, really, you know, just like really lots of fun and people and love and relationships.
Yeah, there was just, you know, there was a lot of closeness there. And it was like a family, really, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were times, too, when I got in trouble.
Oh, no.
We had traveled. I'll tell you this one story. We had traveled to Michigan to the Women's Music Festival, which used to be a glorious thing. I can't even describe to you. It was like heaven on earth. It was like Woodstock, but for lesbians. And it was a week, and it was nothing but every famous musician in the women's music movement and comedian. And you paid one money and you camped, and it was great. So, and you also didn't wear a shirt for the whole week. Everybody was shorts and nothing else. And I'm just built for that kind of thing emotionally. And you know, it's just like, yeah. So when I got home, when we got back and stuff that next week, we were going out to the country and we all got to dancing and we got hot. I said, hey, guys, let's just take our shirts off, because that's how we'd been living for the last week.
Yeah.
So we started just unbuttoning them down a little bit, you know, and the next thing I know, they're open all the way. And then we're dancing and we're hotter and we just take our shirts off. Of course, nobody wore a bra back then.
Right.
So it was just, you know, a lot of women dancing, and it was a great time. But they finally stepped in, and I can't remember who came over to me and said, Penny, for some reason she thought I had started it. But anyway, she said, Penny, you guys need to put your shirts on. We're going to have to ask you to leave. And I was like, okay. So we did. But for the most part, I didn't usually get in trouble there. They had two dance floors, and they had one or two pool tables. So you could either dance or shoot pool. And then they had a small bar area to sit at and,
Yeah.
A lot going on all the time.
Oh, no, definitely. There's definitely a lot to dig through, too. So in terms of you mentioned there was a dance floor or even more than one dance floor, I think you said. Do you have any recollection of what kind of music they would play? Just like genres, you know, general.
Disco. Genre. It was disco nonstop.
Nonstop.
Come on. Try to keep up.
Well, that's what everyone in the interviews has said, but I always ask anyway, just to make sure. Well, I was also curious if they ever had any like women's music, like performers come in, if there was ever any like
music. Well, they didn't have, but they had were, like not really a drag show, but they'd have like the, there was one woman who did Michael Jackson, was very good at doing Michael Jackson. So there were a few that did in person, that kind of thing. I don't even know what you'd call it, but
yeah,
we didn't really have drag shows. That was at the living room and other places. But there were some impersonators that did different artists and stuff. So the one that comes to mind is Karen Brown doing Michael Jackson. But that didn't happen very often. For the most part, it was just dancing and shooting pool and drinking beer kind of thing. So
okay, yeah. And the other people I've spoken with, they said that it was pretty much just beer at the bar. What do you?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not strictly a beer drinker myself, so I wouldn't have paid much attention if there was anything else. As far as I remember, it was just beer, but I'm sure there were probably bottles here and there if you wanted something else.
Right. And a couple people have mentioned that, like, the exterior of the country, there wasn't some obvious sign that was like, oh, here's the country, you know. Tell me about sort of the exterior and, like, going inside.
Well, do you know where it was? That little strip mall is still there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So, yeah, I don't even remember there being a sign that said the country.
No one has met. Everyone's been like, there was no sign. Yeah.
So it was like there was a liquor store on the end and then a dry cleaner and then maybe a dog grooming place. And you went through two double glass doors into this little lobby area. And then, and then there was a door that went into the bar. So, no indication at all that there was a bar in there. And we were never bothered. I don't remember anyone ever, you know, because sometimes I've been places where there are a bunch of young guys and want to hang out and call you queer or whatever. And I don't remember ever anyone, you know, bothering us in the parking lot or anything like that. So people had to know we were there because, Lord, we were loud.
I was actually, about to ask if there was ever any harassment or anything. And I'm assuming the answer to this next question is a no, but I'll ask it anyway. Did the police ever visit the country? Because I know you mentioned that it was a thing with the living room.
No, I don't remember ever seeing the police there.
Gotcha. Yeah. And different people remember different things about this, but do you remember what days it was open, generally speaking? Like, was it open all the time, or was it only open sometimes, for example?
It wasn't, it wouldn't have been opened on Sunday, I'm sure. And I really can't remember. It must have been at least Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but I'd almost think it was Monday through Saturday. Yeah. Oh, the dogs are starting to turn on me. They're on the other side of the door crying.
That's my cat on the other side of this door.
Oh, God.
Okay, and so as for the people who went to the country, I'm assuming obviously it was mostly women. Did you ever see would any men ever go there? Did you ever see that happen?
Well, I had a couple of gay guys in our crowd that would come occasionally and stuff, but then they'd usually end up leaving after, you know, get pretty bored pretty quick and they'd go downtown. So, but yeah, I mean, occasionally there'd be men, but not very often.
I think my cat just opened the door. Let me close that real quick.
Oh, okay, let's see her. Yeah. She said, let her come in if she wants to. She or he. Hi. Oh, what a pretty one. Now, who is this?
So this is G for short. Her name's Gerard. Actually.
Oh, that's lovely. Hi, Gerard. Don't scratch mommy's face.
I'll put it back now. She obviously read this.
That's pretty funny.
She gets very acrobatic. So she has to stay out
there. She opened the door.
She's never done that, so I was pretty surprised.
I can tell on your face, it's like, did the door just open?
Yeah, I was like, no, not right now.
All right, carry on, young lady.
Yeah. Okay. So this is another one I've asked a few people, and different people gave different answers. So did any women at the country ascribe to or identify as like butch or femme, or were they not really sort of using those words as much at that point?
Well, I think they were we were definitely using the word. And I would say very much so, butch and femme. Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me more about that in terms of how common was it, you know, what sort of, just like more about that essentially and what those words mean.
Well, it was very common. I'm trying to think everyone that I knew and dealt with on a daily basis used those terms. And it wasn't so much you would use it to refer to people, but I, as far as role playing goes, now there wasn't a lot of that necessarily. Nobody. Now I do know in Louisville, much stronger butch femme kind of and family unit kind of thing going on down there when we were young. Cause I know there was a woman I knew, who considered a couple to be her parents kind of thing. And so they were into it real strong, down that way. Now I didn't know anyone in Lexington that I ran into that did, but yeah, we would all refer to each other as, you know, as butch or femme or, you know, when talking about people.
Yeah. And what sort
it was pretty obvious who was what, you know?
Right. I agree. Yeah. But I was going to ask just for more details, like what kind of things would make someone be like, oh, that's definitely a butch, or like, oh, that's definitely, you know, a femme.
The way they dressed, the way they held a cigarette, the way they acted around women. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. What can I say? How can I describe myself?
And did you?
And then, you know, feminine women were. It would be makeup, and just maybe a little more submissive, but maybe not. I don't know. Most of the women I've dealt with were pretty strong-willed women, so I don't know that would necessarily be the case. But butch and femme, we were all very much aware of and kind of lived by, I guess, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And would sort of like couples, like pairings be sometimes like, would it usually be like, oh, butches would date femmes, or were there sort of like mixed, like sort of like other variations where like two femmes or two butches or?
I think there'd be other variations. Mm-hmm. Most of the people I knew, it was distinct butch and femme kind of relationship. And then as we got older, there wasn't so much of a distinction probably. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, you know, it's just naturally who people are. It's like in my marriage now, you know, I do all the outside work. We've got a small farm and I do all the outside work, and thank God Marcia does the cooking, because we'd both starve to death if it was up to me. So, you know, there is still that distinction between, you know, our jobs, but it's more just that I like doing that kind of stuff and she does what she likes to do. So it wasn't necessarily role playing, so to speak.
Yeah. And what were the racial demographics like at the country? Was it mostly white people who would go? Was there ever anyone who wasn't white that would go there? What do you remember?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, that lines up with what other people have said.
Maybe every once in a while, because I did have a close friend and she dated a black woman for a while, so they were there a little bit, but yeah, for the most part, and certainly no Hispanics or anything at that point in time. Now I think there probably would be a lot, just because the population has changed in this area. Right. So yeah, but none then. It was white girls, a bunch of white girls.
Okay, gotcha. Was the black woman you mentioned, was her name Raynette by any chance?
No.
Okay. No. Thought I would know about it. No. So in terms of, well, actually, I think you already mentioned the women's music thing, right? And you said outside of that, it was usually, and the occasional impersonator outside of that was usually like just dancing and talking. And
mm-hmm. Right? Yes.
Okay. And so walk me through like a typical night at the country, like whatever your like typical night would be. Like, you arrive there, do you arrive there alone or are you with friends? Like sort of just like the typical night in general. How would that?
Yeah, we kind of traveled in a pack, probably. What can I say? Everybody, you know, it would just be, we'd usually get there. Like, I couldn't wait to get there. I could have lived there. So we usually get there around 8 or something. There were a lot of people that liked to come in late and make an appearance and arrival kind of thing. So there was always that going on. But I was just like, let's get there and let's start having fun. And so, yeah, I might, if I was dating somebody, then I'd have that person with me. But otherwise, you know, the softball team, we'd pretty much always show up there within the hour. And then we'd be playing pool. We always had a pool table. So we'd be playing pool and drinking beer. And then as the night wore on, people would start dancing more and the music would get louder and everybody would just have a ball. So, yeah. And then we'd stay till it closed.
Yeah.
And I believe it was 1 o'clock.
Yeah. Would you do after parties, or by that point was everyone done?
Basically? No, usually by that point we'd either, depending on what night of the week it was, I shouldn't say often, but occasionally we would then drive to Louisville because the bars didn't close till 4. And so then we would go down there and party until 4 and get home in time to go to work. So
yeah. That's a rough morning.
Yeah, I'm sure my coworkers appreciated the way I looked and probably smelled as I came in, but hey, tough luck. Yeah, most of the time it was 1 o'clock and we'd go home and, you know, call it a night.
Yeah. And in terms of the people who would usually be at the country, were they usually regulars, or would there be frequently like new people coming in? Or was it, again, usually?
I think it was usually regulars. I think it was every lesbian in Lexington. And, you know, if somebody was in from out of town, they'd bring a friend. But for the most part, it was very familiar faces every time you went.
Okay. Yeah. And so I have some women I've spoken with who did have these and some who didn't. Do you remember any membership cards to the country? A membership card. It would just say like the country on it, basically. There's one woman who like has one still.
Sounds kind of familiar, but I don't really remember it. But
it
I wonder.
Like it was only around for a little and then it went away or something.
Yeah, because I wonder if that was even at the beginning, maybe, because there was always a fee to cover charge to get in. And I don't remember if there was like a membership you could pay, but I guess I can't confirm or deny that at this point. I don't really remember. Yeah.
And speaking of cover, was there a cover to get into the country?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was a couple dollars probably anyway. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And how many years did you go to the country? Because eventually it closes. So I'm just curious, like how many years you went there, or did you go there until it ended up closing?
As I know, what year did it close? And I can tell you, I think I was 82, there until
82.
Yeah, I'm sure I did then. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you went.
I know when things kind of shut down for me when I finally settled down. So yeah, 82, I was definitely still there.
Okay, gotcha. And do you remember anything about like the toward the ends of the country's like interim, I guess? Do you remember like why they closed essentially? Do you remember what you thought about it? Do you remember that?
No, I remember everybody was sad. And I remember there were reasons, and I don't remember because it was like 4 or 5 women that opened it together. And I, you know, you heard things. I haven't given some thought to that in 30 years at least, but I don't remember if they started having issues or if that's, I could call, there are people I could call and find out the answer to that question, but you maybe have already spoken with them. So. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think they just ended their relationship as far as wanting to run a bar together kind of thing.
That's like, what other people have told me, essentially, yeah. That the different relationships.
Like there were two couples that started it together and then maybe one single woman. And then, you know, things started happening within the couples. And I think it just got to be where they were ready to hang it up. So yeah, everybody was very sad. I know that.
Okay. Yeah. And how did you feel? Did you also feel sad?
Oh yeah, I'm sure I was. Yeah, it was a great place to go.
Yeah. And do you remember when the country was called the Hidden Door? Do you remember?
Yes.
That?
Yeah, I remember it was called that at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but yeah, but it was
I don't know either.
Yeah. I did. That's funny. I hadn't thought of that either, but yep, it sure was.
Yeah.
I don't know if it started that. If it was the Hidden Door to start,
maybe. What I know is it was the country to start, and it was only the Hidden Door, like for like a period of time toward the end. Yeah,
okay.
The later part, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And that was pretty much the story with that. Mm-hmm. So after the country closes, it sounds like it was a big hub for you all, and it kind of sounds like it was the best place in Lexington to meet women. Afterward, like, is there anything that fills up that vacuum, or did you just start going back to the living room, or I guess Johnny Angels then? I'm not sure if they changed the name.
Yeah, I think it was Johnny Angel by then. For our group, my group, I had a friend, a softball friend, who was a drummer and played, she and a young man played at a Pizza Inn in Frankfurt. Live music, Friday, Saturday nights. So we started going to see her every Friday and Saturday night. We would drive to Frankfurt when we got off work or whatever, and drink beer there. They had a bar in the back of the pizza. It wasn't a Pizza Hut. I think it was called Pizza Inn. And there was a bar in the back, and they had just a little stage, and she and this gentleman would just play music. She played an organ and drums, and he played guitar. And so we actually ended up being asked not to return because it got too gay. I had too many friends coming, and we kind of overtook the bar.
Oh.
And we would get up and slow dance and dance and not dance with the men when they asked us. And after a while, that pissed them off. And so she had to ask me one night. She came by the apartment and said, "Penny, if you guys, I can't have you come anymore. They're going to fire me if you don't stop coming." So we had to stop that. And then shortly after that, I got in a long-term relationship and just stopped running around almost completely. So, yeah.
It's interesting. Most of the interviews that I've done, the reason why people either like stop going to the country or stop just going to bars was they settled down with somebody. That seems to be what would typically happen, because it makes sense, right? It's like you found your person. That's kind of it.
That's right.
Yeah. And so it sounds like you did, because it sounds like this was just your core friend group, but I was going to ask if you stayed in touch with the people who like used to go to the country after the country closed. Like if you were.
Yeah, our core group is still a core group. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that to this day still a core group?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me more about that. How is it you all stay in touch or socialize? I know it might be difficult with like COVID and all of that, but yeah.
We've just always been a tight knit group. I think there's 8 of us that have stayed, you know, and remain close friends. Two of them have passed. But now several of us are UK women's basketball fans. So we've got season tickets, and so we go to all the women's games. We see each other a couple times a week there. And and it's not something where you talk to everybody all the time, but you know they're out there and that kind of thing. So
And so kind of walk me through your life, sort of, this might be a big question, but walk me through your life, like post-country up to today, just kind of like general big life events.
Okay. So big life events.
Yeah. So it might take a while. That's okay.
Country closed, you said, in 82, which makes sense, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I had a motorcycle accident in 83, which slowed me down considerably. And then in 84, I met and moved in with the woman that I am currently married to. So we were engaged, as I like to say, for 29 years until the Supreme Court said it was okay to get married. So we got married in 2013.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a big deal.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, she has 2 children. We now have a grandson who's 18 years old. We just sent him off to center to college. Mm-hmm. I worked at the phone company for 41 years and retired 5 years ago, and have found that retirement can't be legal. It's so much fun. I just keep waiting on him to knock on the door and say, "Sorry, lady, you can't do this anymore."
Right.
But yeah. So that's, it's awesome. We've had a good long life and been very fortunate and blessed in a lot of ways. So
yeah,
it's all good.
And you know, I got to do it. You know, I got to dig into this. So why, and I can feel sort of why, but just for the purposes of the interview, what is it about, you know, talking about finally, you know, being legally married and all of that? What is it about that still brings up a lot of emotions for you to this day? Because it seems like it definitely does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just, well, I know it's that, you know, you spent your whole life being told no.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is not right, or being denied basic human rights, and nobody questioning it, you know?
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, it's that's always going to hurt. You know, always be sad.
Yeah, right.
But you know, as I said, I wouldn't change a minute of it. And I'm ready to march on Washington anytime you want to go.
Yes.
Oh, Lordy. So yeah, we used to go to women's ER, went to Chicago, went to Washington, in March for the Equal Rights Amendment, which we were not successful in doing. But, you know, it's been a lifelong struggle.
It sounds like you're pretty you have a stake and an interest in activism.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Sort of like where, I mean, I can see where it comes from, obviously, but sort of when in your life did that kind of start? How would you sort of express that part of you, et cetera?
I can tell you exactly when it started. It started in 75, 3 months into the phone company. I heard there was a woman there who was from Oklahoma, and I thought, being a cowgirl myself, I thought, oh, I have to meet her. If she's from Oklahoma, she's a cowgirl. So I met her, fell in love with her. We lived together for several years, and she is to this day my best friend and a total activist. She should be running the country, in my view. She's that good. She's a therapist now and works with kids that have been sexually abused and stuff. And but yeah, she's always ready to fight the good fight. And for a while, it was just her dragging me along. But then I learned like everything. And so we've done a lot of that over the years together. And yeah, it's always been something important. And I think, you know, hopefully people your age will stay involved and not let everything we've tried to fight for be lost, because they're sure trying. Yeah. You know,
It's
I look at what's happening in Texas, and it's just so sad. Sad.
Yeah, it is. It's scary too, isn't
It
it?
is scary, you know. It's just, oh well, don't get me started.
We're about to get started on the Texas thing. It's like,
Yeah, really. Oh God,
like
please
we're about
help
to go off.
me. Oh geez.
But actually,
I saw a thing on the internet where it said, "Welcome to Texas," and it had a picture of the Handmaid's Tale lady. You ever see the Handmaid's Tale? Yeah. Yeah. So
it's
welcome to
very
Texas, and there's
cool.
that picture. And I thought, boy, isn't that the truth? Oh God.
It really
Oh,
is,
God.
though. It really is.
Really is. Jesus, it's
Well,
scary.
actually, my next question, it relates to what we've just been talking about.
What, making me cry?
No, I've got one later that will probably make you cry again, so I'm going to save
Oh,
that.
jeez. Oh, here. Oh, God, I do have
But no,
Kleenex.
this one was more about sort of like the idea of like women's rights, LGBT rights, progress, et cetera.
Kleenex.
Good.
I didn't even know I had them. Okay, go ahead. Hit me.
Okay. So thinking about, Lexington during the time that you went to the country, so late 70s, early 80s, and thinking about Lexington now, or you could just think about the broader country, but I'm just focusing on Lexington. Is Lexington, different than it used to be? And in what ways is it different, or in what ways is it similar? I'm thinking, more through the scope of like gay things, but anything that you find relevant, of course.
Well, I think it seems more accepting. It always seemed somewhat accepting to me. You know, I knew, I was always aware that there were a lot worse places you could live than Lexington. But now, you know, with like the great Gay Pride Festival and the things that happen, I think as times have changed, Lexington has followed and been pretty accepting and willing for the most part. Now, when it comes to the churches, that's a whole nother thing. You know, they just fought tooth and nail. The Fairness Amendment that we tried to get passed, what, 8 or 10 years ago, and I stopped going to church after that, just because, you know, it's all this, oh, we love you and we accept you, but they don't really. They want to accept you long enough to change you or to see you changed, but other than that, no, not really. So I decided I don't need that.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier in the interview that like you grew up a certain way in terms of church and whatnot, but I remember you mentioned like, oh, I don't really practice anything in particular, now. So I is that connected with the fairness ordinance and the feeling of kind of betrayal?
I think that was the last straw for me, for sure. It's something I struggled with a long time, but you know.
No, that definitely makes sense to me. So I'm getting to my last like two questions or so, just like heads up on that.
Okay.
Yeah, the first one, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but the first one is simply, is there anything that you feel I've missed in terms of country related stuff? Like anything, and you don't have to like come up with something right on the spot, but I'm just putting it in your head that way before the end of the interview, if there's something that like some story you wanted to tell or some questions I didn't ask about the country, that feel free to sort of, bring that up. And if you only think of it after the interview, you can also like text it to me or whatever if you want to. I know that happens a lot with interviews where it's like afterward, you're like, oh, I forgot about,
Yeah. Oh, I should have said this. Yeah. No.
Yeah, it'll happen. It happens to all of them.
I think you've caught the essence of it, just that it was such a loving place, and just the only place women had to go to that gave them that feeling. So, yeah.
And that actually, I can feel it in you. And that actually is touching on my last question, which is the one where
Oh,
I'm like, oh,
great.
this one, we're going to get
Yeah.
emotional again. So, I mean, we've kind of gone on, a time travel trip together, or at least for you, we have, in terms of talking about this place that you used to go to and used to be. Well, I mean, still is, really important to you. What do you feel when you look back on it now after all this time and like getting to talk about it out loud with someone who wasn't even around then,
Yeah, I think number one, it's really cool that you care
Of
to
course.
even to
Of course
ask the
I care.
question. Yeah.
Of
And
course.
other than that, anytime I think about it, I just feel joy. It was such a great place. Yeah. And it was so important at the time. And I don't think we even realized how important it was at the time. I'm sure now most of us do and have for quite a while realized that it was special. It was the one place you could go and be normal. And be like everybody else that was going to bars and having just their normal social interactions. That was a place we could go and be completely ourselves. And that was the only place, really. Yeah. The bars
Because,
were it.
because I know, like you mentioned that there were other bars you went to, and some other people I've talked with also went to, some of the other bars, usually the gay ones, of course. But it seems like there was something
Yeah.
very special, specifically about the country for you all. And, I can like have theories as to why, but it seems like, a lot of it was that it was women focused. Like it
Right,
was for women.
right. That was it. Yeah. There was one women's bar in Louisville, and there was the country. And yeah, it was special. It just, because it was women directed and owned, and it was our place. So.
I love that phrase. It was our place. I'm writing that one down.
Well, good.
No, I was like taking notes throughout. But yeah, okay, that sort of gets
Cries
to
cries a lot. Did you put that down? Did you not write? Just
No,
was
I didn't put that down specifically, but I did write
down.
like, why did you cry, to like remind myself to
Just
ask
put
you like,
down
why
instead
to
of that,
cry.
put laughed until she cried. How about
Okay, I'll change
that?
that. But yeah, Penny, thank you for sharing everything with me and being vulnerable with me. I'm starting to get a little emotional myself for some reason. I don't know why. I guess because I'm starting to get toward the end of the project, and I know that there's only going to be so many more interviews left. So I'm definitely feeling
So now tell me about the project real quick. I know you
it.
got on your read on the website and stuff. So.
So I'm the interviewer and the project director for this project, and the full title is The Country Remembering Lexington's First Lesbian Bar. And it is grant funded by the Kentucky Oral History Commission. Like I applied for grant funding from them to like do this project. And they supported it because that year they were interested in, I guess, what they called like minority stories. And I was like, okay, time to, get money to do stuff about lesbians, basically, this is a good
That's
opportunity.
awesome.
And then the interviews are going to be stored in the Faulkner Morgan Archive, which is a local, Kentucky LGBT history focused archive. And That's actually the website that the country's webpage is on is the Faulkner Morgan Archive like website.
So is that Henry Faulkner?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, I remember him. He used to come to our parties and stuff, and I've been to parties at his place. Oh my God, he was a wild guy. He was something. He loved umbrellas. His whole apartment was full of umbrellas hanging from the ceiling and stuff.
What?
Yeah, it was wild. It was a very sad day for a lot of us when he died.
So he would even hang out with the lesbians.
Yeah, on Second Street there was one of my good friends lived two doors down, and she and Henry ended up just loving each other to death. And so I would be, when he'd have a party or Marcia would have a party, I'd often be there and stuff. So
yeah,
I was around him. I was much more aware of him than he was of me, I'm sure. He was a great guy.
Gotcha. So I mean, yeah, cool. Like that's kind of, that must be a bit of a throwback for you. So yeah, like the archive that's named after him is the one that's helping me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like a cool moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're a student?
I'm a graduate student at UK. I'm finishing my PhD in gender studies. I defend my dissertation in November. So by December, I'll be done, and it's like done. It's happened.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations ahead of time.
Thank you. My goodness. Yeah. I mean, isn't that insane? Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, as far as, you know, the country in this interview goes, I'll definitely reach out to you afterward because there is like a form everyone signs. And so I will get your address and mail that to you. There's also an online post-interview survey that is 5 short questions, takes 5 minutes to do. It's just kind of like boop, boop, and then you send it in and it's done. So I'll send that as well. And I don't know if you knew this, but I mean, actually, maybe you could have been there. Like, you had to be there. You were at the country event this summer, right?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, you were?
I saw the picture. No, I don't think I was aware of it until after it was over.
Yeah.
And one of my good friends, Connie Harrison, was there. Mm-hmm. And she sent me her name. Her nickname is Slick, by the way. Slick sent me cover pictures and told me about it stuff.
That's good. Connie was the first person I interviewed for this project, actually.
I'm not surprised. There's a reason.
Yeah, no, she was so helpful. She was literally so helpful. She got me in touch with so many people.
Yeah, I'll bet she did. I'll bet she did. Most of whom she's probably dated.
True.
Oh, she was our catcher.
Yeah, Connie's awesome. Yeah, I like her a lot.
She's a good woman.
Yeah. All right, well, Penny, thank you for talking with me, and I'll text you about, you know, different forms and all of that.
Okay, that sounds awesome. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too, honestly. I really have. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good evening. Pet the cat for me.
I will. All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye, sweetie.